This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, folks. We are joined by Romina Baccia, Director of Federal Budget and Entitlement Policy at the Cato Institute. She authored a piece last week or so, 2 years of Sounding the Alarm, Reflections and Progress on Addressing the U.S. Debt Crisis. Our national debt is now north of $35 trillion. And she authored this piece as she celebrates her second anniversary as being the director there at the Cato Institute. Romina, welcome to the show and congratulations on your second year anniversary.
Thank you so much. Appreciate you having me on.
Thank you for joining us. A lot of folks kind of ignore what this number is with the national debt. If you would, for the benefit of the listening audience, if you would kind of explain, you know, why is this important? And then we'll move into the meat of your article about some of the good things that have happened and some of the not so good things.
I think over the past few years, people have really come to experience the negative consequences of a government debt that is too high, because we had massive inflation. And that's something all Americans got to experience, whether it's at the grocery store, seeing their rent checks go up, or at the gas pump.
That was
in large part a result of the stimulus spending from the pandemic, and also just a massive blowout in emergency spending that the government undertook during that time, far in excess of what was necessary to respond to the pandemic. The issue we have with the budget now and the $35 trillion debt is symbolic of that, is that government spending, now that we're out of the crisis, continues to grow at a massive pace. Washington is running deficits of about $2 trillion a year, which, if you look at as a percentage of our economy, those deficits are as large as crisis deficit. But the reason now is not that we're responding to a crisis, but rather that we have legacy programs on the book that are growing rapidly in cost, and Congress has not taken action to rein these costs in. And that's primarily programs like healthcare programs, Medicare, Medicaid, but also Social Security, which is growing rapidly. And so these spending increases are now baked in. And so the inflation that we just got to taste following the pandemic may very well become a long-term reality over the next decade plus.
So also for the benefit of the audience, what you just said, I think, is incredibly important. We all have our own budget at home. We balance our checkbook, so to speak. So they are spending right now $2 trillion more than what they're actually receiving in revenue, right?
This is correct.
So in simplistic terms, they're spending money they really don't have, so that we're borrowing this money, and the interest cost on the money that we're borrowing is eating us alive in many respects.
Yes, interest is now the fastest growing spending category, surpassing even healthcare spending increases and also other benefit spending increases, like for Social Security and veterans benefits, which has been some of the other fast growing categories. And some of that is because of the higher interest rates that also came about due to the inflation and the Federal Reserve trying to bring inflation back down. Some of it is also the government crowding out our credit markets. And what does that mean? It means there's less money available for businesses and for individuals to borrow because the government is borrowing so much. Because there is, you know, credit is a scarce resource, just like other resources that we have available. And so when the government uses up more of the credit, that leaves less for businesses and for individuals. And that then means higher interest rates for things like mortgage, a car loan, or for someone who wants to build or expand their business. And all of that downstream translates into lower living standards for Americans, especially when it comes to businesses not being able to get off the ground or expand, and therefore also not being able to innovate at the pace that Americans have become accustomed to. So there's real costs to all of us that are often unseen when the government oversteps, overreaches, and gets too big. And we experience this through higher prices. We also experience this with Americans feeling like they can't get ahead no matter how hard they work, because getting ahead means having an economy that is growing, that provides new opportunities for individuals, and that comes about when people are able to start and expand businesses. And when they can't get the credit to do so because the government is sucking up all of the credit in the market, then that means that we all get to suffer, and people don't always know where to point the finger. And that's sort of what I'm trying to help with.
Romina, both candidates right now, both Vice President Harris as well as former President Donald Trump, are proposing tax cuts. So with a tax cut, that means less revenue coming in. And how did they explain around that, and whereby the national debt would not exponentially increase as a result of these tax cuts?
You know, it's really remarkable how both candidates have been able to just pretend like we are not already in a debt crisis. And they're continuing to do this. Now, on the Democratic side, they're saying they want to raise taxes on the wealthy. And there's a number of bad proposals that would actually hurt the economy. And if your tax increase actually reduces economic growth, it's like shooting yourself in the foot. You're not actually able to get ahead. But overall, this election cycle really has been marked by candidates from all sides falling over each other, trying to provide handouts, new handouts, to people, couching it in tax cut language or tax credit language. But a lot of these are actually spending programs, like the expanded child tax credit that both Kamala Harris and J.D. Vance would support. And so those electoral promises are completely unaffordable. And there's been no mention of how either candidate would address the very real predictable debt crises that we're in, and that is getting worse every day, that we neglect to fix this deficit and debt problem. And, you know, the one thing I would say, that when people hear we're going to give you tax cuts and there will be new spending increases and everyone gets something and nobody has to pay the price, you can translate that into we're just going to print the money. When we run out of the ability to borrow the money, because investors are going to start looking at the United States as less of a good credit risk than we've been in the past, if we don't pay our debts, if we don't stabilize our finances and get towards more of a balanced budget, then we'll eventually run out of investors wanting to buy our debt. And then what's going to happen? Well, we saw this during the pandemic as well. The Federal Reserve just started running the printing presses, and that's why we had all this inflation. And now the Federal Reserve has reined that in because of the inflation blowout that happened. But over the long term, if we continue on this fiscally destructive path, we're going to destroy our money, because they're just going to have to print it, and that causes price increases, and that erodes the purchasing power of every dollar in your wallet, every dollar in your savings account. And what we know as well is that that tends to hurt lower income Americans the most, who are less able to shield their savings from inflation by, say, investing them in real estate or in the stock market. You know, wealthier people can hedge. They can see it coming. They can hedge and protect their savings. But lower income Americans whose paychecks can't keep up with inflation, whose savings end up getting eaten up by the increase in prices, they're the ones who will suffer the most.
It's amazing how, you know, we've set up like there's these degrees of separation where folks don't ultimately, you know, get impacted by these decisions. And I did a monologue on this yesterday about don't think that by taxing the wealthy that you in the middle class and you in the lower socioeconomic classes are not going to be impacted, because you will be. And, you know, no one can explain away that impact.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's pivot real quick to credit risk. What is the U.S. credit rating at the present time?
Well, we've been downgraded. We used to have a triple A rating among all of the three major credit agencies. In 2011 was the first time we got downgraded by Standard and Poor's to double A. And then Fitch downgraded us late last year. I want to say it was in August, actually, roughly a year ago now. And then Moody's followed with a negative outlook. So they haven't downgraded us yet, but they've given us a negative outlook. So our credit rating has already suffered. In international comparisons, we still have a fairly high credit rating compared to other nations that are indebted as we are. And one of the reasons is that the U.S. dollar, you know, is still the global reserve currency, and that gives us a buffer where the United States can borrow more than other countries could. But right now, our politicians are acting as if they can borrow however much they want and it will never come back to haunt them and there won't ever be any consequences. And that's just not true. Other nations that have operated this way, like the UK used to be, the pound sterling used to be the global reserve currency. After World War II, what allowed the United States to step into that role was in part that Britain had over-leveraged itself, not just for the war effort, but also by expanding its entitlement programs significantly, including the National Health Service that the UK has. And so they spend themselves into so much debt that they actually lost their role as the global superpower. And that's a status that the United States enjoys today, but it's a status that was hard-earned, and that in order to maintain, we need to be more disciplined, especially when it comes to government finances.
So when we talk about these, again, with these tax increases, I was reading a series of articles over this week, and I'm sure you have read the same ones, that wealthy Democrats now are pushing back against these proposals because they see that this puts them and their businesses and their access to capital at risk, right?
Yes, and we're seeing this especially with the so-called SALT deduction, the state and local tax deduction, where you have Democrats, especially in high tax states like New York and California, some of the big campaign donors to the Democratic Party as well, pushing for them to get their state and local tax deduction back. The problem, of course, with that is that if the federal government gives states like New York and California a tax deduction for their high spending and tax policies, that is revenue that is missing from the federal government, and we are actually subsidizing these states and their policies which doesn't make any sense for the rest of the country. Like middle Americans, people living in the middle of our country, shouldn't be supporting fiscally irresponsible states on the coasts. And but that's one of the examples, and you can see the hypocrisy on both sides. There's sort of that hand waving. We're going to tax the wealthy. We're going to tax the rich, whatever that means. Just somebody other than you, and everyone's going to get more benefits. That's sort of what we're witnessing in this election cycle. It's like a Santa Claus kind of policy where we've got gifts for everyone, and they're coming from somewhere else, right? Nobody's paying for anything, and that's just not sustainable. And if you look at where we're headed, you know, Europe is a good example of where the United States wants to have now a European-style welfare state, massive welfare state with middle-class entitlements abound, and wants to finance it with low taxes. Well, that doesn't work. So our options are we can have a debt crisis, we can print the money and have an inflation crisis, or we can eventually raise taxes on the middle-class and lower-income Americans, which is what they're doing in Europe. So there might be a combination of those three, but to think that we can just have such generous welfare programs and continue to expand them and never pay for them, that's just crazy. It's insane to believe that's how the economy could work.
And we don't really see, I mean, in your article, you talk about there were some bright spots, you thought, I guess, in some respect, as some of the new leadership and some of the things that were being talked about, they did pass some things that were positive in nature. But still, overall, we're really putting ourselves behind the eight ball, right?
Yes, overall, we are still digging a deeper hole with our debt and rising deficits. But there has been some progress in Congress. I was very encouraged when Speaker Mike Johnson refused to pass a massive omnibus, which is when they put all the spending bills in one package and shove it right down Americans' throats over Christmas. We were able to avoid that, and I think that overall reduced the size of the package that ultimately got passed. He insisted on separate votes also for things like Ukraine aid and Israel aid and Taiwan aid, and I think that also helped to reduce the size of these packages. So it's sort of like we spend more, we increase the deficit, but by less than might have otherwise been the case. I've also seen the House Budget Committee try to take more forceful action against the executive overreaching by providing all the student loan debt relief by executive fiat without congressional approval. That's a real overreach by the Biden administration that is costing Americans hundreds of billions of dollars and is now one of the key drivers of our debt crises. They're also trying to tighten up how Congress budgets. There's been a lot of gimmicks that have made their way into the budget process. They've abused categories like emergency spending, which let them spend more than they agreed upon by just labeling something an emergency. And the House Budget Committee is trying to rein those in. And we've been helping them with those efforts as well to bring light to these issues and demonstrate how emergency spending has actually contributed more than $14 trillion to our $35 trillion debt just over the past 30 years. So this is a significant and sizable loophole that we need to close. And Jody Arrington, a Republican from Texas, who's the chair of the House Budget Committee, is working on that now. The one area where I was really encouraged, where we've sort of seen more radio silence recently, has been the establishment of a fiscal commission to stabilize the debt, to bring lawmakers across the political spectrum together to discuss the options on the table, weigh all the trade-offs, and then put forth a package that will reduce the growth in the debt and avert a debt crisis. There was a bill that passed the House Budget Committee in January. Then a lot of opponents came out of the woodworks accusing the bill sponsors of details that weren't even in the bill. There were a lot of lies. I tried to debunk some of them. But with this election cycle now heating up, lawmakers have decided to just be silent on the topic. However, there will be another opportunity, I think, to bring back the fiscal commission idea. And that might happen in the lame duck after the election in November. But it all depends also on what happens with our economy. You know, things like reining in our deficits and debt, politicians find it a lot easier when we're in a crisis. So should the United States find itself in a recession, which some are predicting potentially for early 2025, especially if the Federal Reserve will cut rates next month, it could delay a potential recession. That might be the time where Congress will be looking for things like, you know, how do we cut spending and rein in deficits and fix our long-term debt crises? And that's when a fiscal commission might come up again.
And I did want to point out to the listening audience, I know that you won't, Romina, that you know about, you know, when they have a lot of falsehoods talked about, because a lot of what they're considering are actually ideas that you and some of your peers have been putting and pushing Congress to adopt, right? And y'all have been successful in many of the suggestions and proposals that you guys have put forward to try and rein in this debt, quite frankly, because it's in many respects, I think it's easy to characterize it as a runaway train. And we kind of just forget where this is going to end up, and it's going to be ugly. It's coming home to roost. It's not a question of if, it's a question of when, right?
Yes, and we want to make sure that lawmakers have the knowledge and the tools to make better decisions when they find themselves in a crisis, because often lawmakers won't act until they're pushed up against a hard deadline or they're in the middle of a crisis where the American people expect them to take bold action. And that work needs to happen behind the scenes well in advance to make sure lawmakers are familiar with the tools available, the proposals that will actually make a difference, and they reach for the right ideas at that time instead of harmful tax increases that could undermine our economic growth. We want to make sure that there's ideas there that deregulate, that will allow for more growth, for businesses to grow and thrive and to hire more people, but also to cut spending to create that space where the American people and businesses can thrive instead of being choked by the stranglehold, not just of red tape, but also of our ever burdensome national debt, which, you know, is obviously we're paying for it in the form of higher interest rates and also higher prices on everyday goods and services.
Absolutely. Romina Baccia, we love your work. Keep up the great work. Thank you so much for joining us. And again, congratulations on your second anniversary of being the Director of Budget and Entitlement Policy at the Cato Institute. Have a great Labor Day weekend.
You too. Thank you so much.
Thank you. We'll be right back, folks. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line. When we come back, we'll visit with Ron Fauché, political analyst and publisher of Lunchtime Politics, headed your way. Stay with us.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.